Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, I want to let you know that Paul and Jordana come on at 3:35 tomorrow on President's Day. And they're going to ask the question, can a digital detox cure your addiction to your phone? Well, you want to listen in on Monday to the Paul and Jordana show. That's coming up from 3 to 6 p.m. Now, I'm very excited because someone that I really respect, have great admiration for, is in studio with me right now. Twin Cities Public Television is celebrating Black History Month with a special about an incident in Minneapolis where a mob of hundreds of people marched on an African American's house to prevent them from moving in. What do you think? This little known incident is the catalyst for the new local documentary called Jim Crow of the North. This happens on February 25th. TPT is premiering the documentary that looks at racial housing discrimination leading to de facto segregation in Minneapolis in the early 1900s, how African-American families and leaders resisted this insidious practice, and how Black people built community within and despite the segregation. Now, the series features local experts, opinions, and an explanation of historical segregation in Minneapolis. That's right. You always say, not in my backyard. Well, hey, it's been there all the time. And its lasting impact in Minneapolis. Daniel Bergen is his name. He's a TV producer at Twin Cities Public Television, media educator, independent filmmaker, and he is joining me now. Welcome to WCCO.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Great to see you, sir. It's an honor to have you in studio because I have had the honor of working with you. I've watched you work. I have felt the patience and the calmness when working with you. And I often watch what you are doing a documentary about, what it's all about, and I can't understand how you remain calm through it all. Tell me what the documentaries, specifically those of Black communities or communities of colors, of color, how does that affect you?
Yeah, that's a great question. I really appreciate that because it really – the idea of the process of making these films is one that I really love for audiences to have a sense of. So for me, you know, it's really important to represent all of Minnesota. My work with Twin Cities PBS has always been about including absent narratives and missing voices, whether that's youth of color, some of the different diverse communities in the Twin Cities, or voices from greater Minnesota. We want to make sure that we're hearing everyone's story. So I've been really proud and pleased to be able to share some of these stories in our work. You and I collaborated on a great film called Cornerstones, A History of North Minneapolis, and you brought that musical, beautiful voice to that important story that was so underrepresented for so long. So like Cornerstones, this new film really is about kind of revealing a hidden history. Unfortunately, unlike Cornerstones, this is a really tough story. And to your question, it's kind of hard to be immersed in some of this difficult history for months at a time, but it's important. And we've really, I think, created something that's going to create a lot of conversations. I was listening to your conversation in the last segment, and so much of what this film talks about is about policy. It's about planning, and that these things were intentional, and they set in motion this discrimination and inequity that we're still struggling with today, and we're only stopped because of policy and protest and action and the courts. So it's difficult to kind of have to kind of immerse yourself in this history, but it's important. And ultimately, as you said, there are stories of resistance that are inspiring and instructive. And so I always want to make sure to weave those into the stories as well.
You have two beautiful girls. And I wonder what it's like for them to have to hear maybe conversations through the walls of you and your wife talking about what you're working on and how painful that is. And if you introduce it to them, do you sit down with them and say, this is what Daddy is doing and this is why Daddy is doing it?
Oh, what a great question. Yeah, they're, my daughters are really smart. They're kind of very aware and conscious. They're also very empathetic and sensitive. And so they, you know, I do want to think about some of the content that I share. And we have conversations. Their mother's better at talking with them about some of these issues than I am. But they also know that history is important. And even though hanging out with History Dad, as I call myself with them, can be kind of annoying as I have them read all the historic markers on a road trip and always find some history to weave into our experiences in our daily lives. They know what I do is important in that the past is present and that history matters. And mm-hmm. we live in South Minneapolis, which, you know, is a historic, near historic black community that their school is connected to. So we talk about that. And they know that they even observe at their school, they've said, it's interesting, Dad, but the black kids all kind of walk north and the white kids all head to Minnehaha Creek. And so they're seeing what kind of was set in motion by the restrictive covenants that we learned about in Jim Crow of the North.
Well, you and your wife have definitely you live that example in front of them, help them understand that this is important to notice. And I have to go back to when you started. You were, what, 9 years old when you started working on the Super 8 film? I mean, you were experimenting with it. I hear that you did some karate movies I need to look for. So this really this was an early part of your life when you had this passion. Did you ever expect it, or did you ever intend for it to be what it is today?
I think I always hoped it would be. You're right. I was allowed, because of some great teachers, access to early reel-to-reel video equipment, Super 8 film. And so we were playing with that and kind of experimenting at an early age. You know, I probably watched too much TV and loved movies. Couldn't go to a lot of movies, couldn't afford to, our family. But so I think whenever I did, it really had that power and magic. But yeah, all along, I saw the power and eventually learned about Gordon Parks, who is, you know, a hero of mine, and his idea, who became, you know, the first African-American filmmaker in Hollywood, pioneering photojournalist in magazines, author. But his idea of a choice of weapons, the idea of using the camera to make a change, to fight against poverty and bigotry and some of the ills of America, was something that, as I kind of got older, started to see the potential to do with filmmaking and with media making.
Yeah, that was something that happened with the civil rights movement. It never would have been successful without someone being behind the camera.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, you think about just how impactful it was when photographers or news cameramen captured some of those pivotal moments, the Children's Crusade and the dogs and fire hoses. That really changed hearts and minds in America. So that, or Gordon Parks kind of intentionally, you know, humanizing Malcolm X or Muhammad Ali through his photo essays, it's powerful. And it's even more important today with some of the things we're dealing with in terms of, you know, fake news and the manipulation of in social media and in our politics. So media literacy, that understanding of the power and impact of media, being able to deconstruct and decode media, but also being able to make it yourself and tell your own story, is really important. And that was something that I've been involved with all along.
Most of us grew up understanding that documentaries were all about the facts, telling the true story, bringing the truth forward and letting people see it, no matter if you like it, it makes you uncomfortable, or it makes you happy. It's still the truth of the events and things that happen. Yet we find ourselves with film, you're a filmmaker as well, and we have these fact fiction movies that add in so much information that we know happened, yet they're able to take liberties, right, with it. And that kind of skews what we really have an understanding of. Are you seeing that slip into documentaries?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, documentaries, since their very beginning with, well, I suppose like Nanook of the North, you know, in the 1920s. And this was an anthropologist who picked up cameras and started to do kind of ethnographies. And he said, you know, there was a lot of recreations. He was having these, you know, native Alaskan, native people kind of use spears to hunt seals when they would have used rifles. And he has a quote that's interesting. He said something like, sometimes you must manipulate a thing in order to show its true meaning. I mean, basically, but that was really, this is Robert Flaherty. He's the father of documentaries in many ways. And so, you know, there's always been that tension of how true and how real is a documentary film. And it's something that, you know, that I am cognizant of when we're making our documentaries at Twin Cities PBS.
You know, you always concentrate, of course, at TPT on Minnesotans. And so you have had documentaries, North Star, Minnesota's Black Pioneers, as we've talked about, Cass Gilbert, Standing the Test of Time, who is the man who is an architect and was able to build the Capitol here and in a few other states. Of course, Zero Street. Tell us a little bit about Zero Street.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for asking. That was fun. It was I got a film grant 20 years ago to make a children's film.
Was that the Bush?
This was actually a national grant. It's the Independent Television Service. So it's CPB money that would go to independent filmmakers to kind of broaden and diversify the voices on public TV. And my proposal was kind of a after-school special with an edge. It was inspired by the short film The Red Balloon that you may remember is a little Parisian boy running around with a magical balloon. And so I loved that idea of the power of imagination and childhood and thought too many kids in some of our neighborhoods don't get to be children, don't get to have that kind of reverie of childhood. And so this film kind of talks about that power of imagination, but again, towards making change in one's community. So it was a fun, interesting narrative film that was seen around the country. It was different. It was, you know, again, kind of took on some of the tough issues that young people in urban settings and youth of color and African-American youth have to deal with. But again, it weaved in kind of that magic and that power of imagination. Well, thanks for asking. I hadn't thought about Zero Street in a long time.
You know, it's amazing as you wear a lot of hats. I was reading about you. You're an adjunct professor in St. Cloud, I believe. You're a filmmaker, documentary producer, and so much more, writer. Have you written a book?
I haven't.
Is that next on the docket?
Wow, interesting. You know, I love writing, and it's so central to what I do as a filmmaker. And I'll tell young people this, and I think they think I'm doing the kind of the stay-in-school speech, but it really is rooted in the literary arts, the idea of storytelling and structure, the power of words, and whether there's a formal script and a narration, or as in the case with Jim Crow of the North, if it's not, and it's just kind of constructing and assembling, you know, kind of interviews and other elements into that narrative. I love writing. So yeah, at some point that would be a fun goal. I've written for print in short form, and it is, in a way, kind of liberating, because otherwise when I'm telling stories with film, it's a big, expensive endeavor. So, but yeah, well, if you have some ideas, we'll have to talk. I'd love to write a book.
I love how you do what it is that you do. Do you consider yourself a producer first and foremost?
Yeah, and you know, for people, when they hear the word producer, sometimes they think like Hollywood producer, and that's kind of someone who manages the business and the money, and that's not me.
Well, you do have a regional Emmy.
Yeah, well, and so in television, producer is kind of the creative manager. So with my documentaries, I produce, meaning I'm coordinating, researching, kind of connecting with folks in community.
Writing.
And then writing, certainly.
And
then,
that's key, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so so it's kind of an all kind of encompassing term. It's a lot of directing, too, which people would kind of then kind of get. Producer director is, you know, doing all of that kind of reporter work, but also kind of working on the aesthetic and the art of the film as well.
When I go back and look at my body of work, there are many times when I say, oh, how I wish I had done something. Is there something, when you look back on all the documentaries, and how many have there been?
Oh, boy, I've lost count.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, that's right. I'm really fortunate. Yeah.
You're very fortunate. But is there something that you look back on and say, oh, I wish I had added this. I wish I had taken away that.
Absolutely. There's always creative regrets. There's always errors and omissions. And it's interesting you say, I was just watching North Star, Minnesota's Black Pioneers with a corporate group, a Black History Month event. And, you know, and I'm able to watch that one after all these years and many viewings and be really comfortable. My crew did a great job. It's really, it looks beautiful. It sounds great. I do listen for my writing. Back to your other question, that's where if there's regrets or pangs or flinches from me, I'm like, oh, I could have worked on that script a little, or I could have found a different kind of language flow there. But what I don't want, and fortunately haven't had, is real regrets where, you know, the work I did some damage in the community. I misrepresented someone or something. that's where, and especially some of the documentaries I've done that aren't history documentaries, like I did a series called Make It Okay, and it was about mental illness and stigma. And in that case, we actually worked with the folks we were profiling, had them watch rough cuts, and really to kind of see that, to make sure that the storytelling was kind of felt right to them.
I'm interested to know more about the Jim Crow of the North, which is happening on February 25th at TPT. We're going to take a break and then come back and make sure that people know exactly when it's coming on and exactly what it's about. You're listening to Steel Talk, and I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. Daniel Bergen, a TV producer at Twin Cities Public Television, is in studio joining us. We'll be back in a moment. It is now 8:26 here at WCCO, and as we wrap up the conversation tonight with Daniel Bergen, a TV producer at Twin Cities Public Television, a media educator, independent filmmaker, and so much more, the show is called Jim Crow of the North, that we are talking about. The documentary is a local documentary, Jim Crow of the North, and it's happening on TPT February 25th. You don't want to miss it. Welcome back, Daniel.
Hey there.
So what do you want people to know that are interested in watching this?
Yeah, this is a really important story, and it really, I think, the idea is it kind of answers some of the question of how we got to now. Minnesota, as you know, has some of the worst disparities, racial disparities, in America. And we're always wondering and pondering and researching, how did this happen? Housing, restrictive housing covenants in real estate in the early part of the 20th century set a stage for redlining that followed a couple decades later. All of this kind of added on to and kind of created some of the segregation and the kind of basically the shaping and mapping of Minneapolis and really of the Twin Cities and all of Minnesota that really kind of set the pace and the tone for some of the disparities we see today, where African Americans weren't able to buy homes in certain neighborhoods. They were then redlined in the neighborhoods they were in, and there was an investment. Their freeways then went through those neighborhoods a few decades later because they were seen as less valued. So this story helps us understand how these housing policies early in the 20th century kind of created some of the situations and the disparities we see today.
The more you learn, the better we are.
Right.
Do you feel that way? You feel
Absolutely.
As though as you learn, you say, hey, we've come a long way? Because some of us feel like we're going backwards.
Yeah. And, you know, this, I think, is a tough history. And we're going back to understand how we got here. But the hope is that awareness and understanding that this isn't about kind of personal pathologies or, you know, certain people not being able to kind of lift themselves up. This is how a systemic racism really has shaped our communities. And so that's what the documentary is about. It starts with housing covenants that exclude African Americans and others. And then it just kind of all of the kind of systemic racism flows from there.
And it can be everlasting.
That's right.
Final question. You really have a passion for education, and I want to know how important it is in your life for your children. And why is it important for you to create Don't Believe the Hype, which was a media literacy program for youth?
Yeah, that Don't Believe the Hype was awesome. And as you can tell from the old Public Enemy song title, this was a 90s and early 2000s youth media training experience at Twin Cities PBS. And it was a really groundbreaking in nationally. And Robin Hickman, my friend and mentor,
yes.
And I, along with Susan Robeson, Paul Robeson's granddaughter,
wow.
She was really the one who brought the idea to TPT. And it was a great experience for these young people who are now not so young. They're middle-aged, and many of them have continued to work in media. And many of them are also kind of working with youth themselves, and as Gordon Parks would want them to.
Is it still going strong?
It's not, actually.
Oh, that
yeah.
broke my heart.
You know, but it's the good news is there are other – this was before everyone had a high-definition camera in their pocket.
Right.
So at that time, we needed to have organizations providing that opportunity, and now I think there's more ways for young people to express themselves, but they still need to know about storytelling and the power of media, and so it's still important to mentor youth.
You are so much more than most people think, and I honor you for that. The more I learn about you, the more respect I have for you. God bless you and your daughters. They are blessed to have you and your wife to teach them our histories through the documentaries that you leave for all of us. And I do hope that in your pain that you suffer through for all of us to receive this information, that you will also receive the blessing.
Oh, wow. Thank
it's
you.
It's been a
Cheryl.
Pleasure having you
this
on,
has been
Daniel.
Lovely. Thank you so much.
All right. That is Daniel Bergen. If you don't know him, honey, look him up. All you got to do is put in Daniel Pierce Bergen, B-E-R-G-I-N. Did I spell that correctly?
That's right.
And you'll find out all about him. It is now 8:33 here at WCCO. Welcome back to Steel Talking. I am your host, Geraldine Steele. Have you heard this question being asked? Should the first 2 years of college tuition, fees, and textbooks at Minnesota public colleges and universities be free? Oh, you know what my answer is. Well, Minnesota State Senator Carrie Dziedzic, I hope I get that right, Dziedzic of Minneapolis, Democrat, has authored a bill at the state legislature that would indeed do just that. And she is joining me now. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Okay, for me, the resounding answer is yes. And I'm sure you're hearing a lot of that, right?
Yes, I am. It's been very good to hear from people all over the state supporting the bill and saying this is something that we need to be having the conversation and looking at.
Okay, tell us more about this proposal.
So the bill is basically saying we should be looking at providing, like you said, 2 years of college free at public institutions. I represent the University of Minnesota, Minneapolis campus area, and I've heard repeatedly from students the last 4 years that are graduating from with $20,000 to $100,000 in debt. And that is just not sustainable. And it's going to impact not just their lives going forward, but our economy, because it will change on what jobs they can have, when they buy homes, cars. It just changes the whole economy when you have that much debt and getting out of debt. And so we started looking at, well, how do we make it more sustainable? And other states have started looking at what do we need to do and putting in different programs to pay for the first 2 years. There are income guidelines, and they need to do their part and, get a good grade point average. But we need to just start having that conversation.
You know, the conversation has really been going on for a long time. I mean, we've had universities, state schools in other states like California, where it was free to go to a community college or free to go to a state college. And here we are in Minnesota asking this question. Of course we should do this. Why would anyone not want it to be done?
I have heard from a few people that are concerned that, not everything in life for free, and do they really appreciate if it's for free? So some people have actually suggested maybe some other alternatives, which I said, well, I think we should look at that. Instead of maybe being, quote, free, maybe we should be giving interest-free loans.
Okay.
So at least you then won't have the interest. Some other people have,
Let's stop right there for a moment, though, because I'm very surprised that people would say that. Okay, so you see at theaters they'll have pay what you can. Some nights to go and see a theater piece, or they'll have free, like the Mixed Blood Theater was free for what, 5 years, where you did radical hospitality, you can just come, right?
Right.
Get a seat, you're in. The problem here is that we know what these young people are up against. My children are millennials, and of course they have that same struggle of not being paid enough, having debt up the, whatever.
Yeah.
And here we are asking the question, well, if you give it to them, then they won't appreciate it. No, that's not true. Because it's not about appreciating like theater. This is something that changes your life and changes my life. The smarter they are, the smarter we are. The better we are for it.
And businesses are right now looking for workers, and they're looking for educated workers. And so starting next year, you're going to need more and more jobs will require a post-secondary education, and we're about 400,000 people short to fill those jobs.
A 400,000 deficit?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. So this should be a no-brainer.
Yes. We need to have that conversation.
No. See, we've had the conversation.
Yeah.
We've had the conversation. When do we move on it?
We're doing it's a budget year this year, so I think we need to start looking at things and figuring out when I'm saying the conversation, we have about a $42-45 billion general fund budget, and of that, it also includes E-12 education, transportation, environment, health and human services, and so there's a lot of needs in there, but we need to be looking at what is best for Minnesota families, Minnesota students, Minnesota seniors, because we're going to need people when, we get older and are in the nursing homes, we're going to need people to take care of us, And so we have those jobs to fill, so it also helps business. And so what should we be doing, and where should those funds go to benefit all of us?
Please answer a question for me and forgive my ignorance. But when you say environment, that it comes out of that piece of the budget, I thought that the lottery took over that piece.
It did not take over the entire. Portion of the lottery dollars does go to fund environmental research and environmental projects, but not the entire budget.
Okay, so what percentage does it go to?
The lottery?
Yeah, the lottery handles what percentage?
It's a small amount.
Oh, really? And so the budget has to handle the rest.
Yep.
Thank you for clearing that up for me. So here we are talking about these young people. That is our future, right?
Yes.
So we know that other states have similar laws, correct?
Mm-hmm.
What states are they other than California?
Hawaii has a bill. New York just did a bill. Tennessee has the Tennessee Promise, and that one is 2 years free at mostly technical and community colleges, and that is about, if we were to do that here, it's about $56 million. New York did it, where you get, at certain New York schools, you get free, but then you have to stay and work in that area.
Don't mind that at all.
No, again, we have jobs that we need to fill.
Right.
Hawaii has the Hawaii Promise. A whole bunch of states have looked at different programs. And so all of this could be, I don't want to say scalable, but it's scalable.
Right. Well, it's doable. There's no doubt about it. And I don't know why we're so afraid of it. I think that we are making ourselves better every time we offer something like this. College tuition, fees, and textbooks. Thanks for putting that in the bill. Thank you so much.
And when you also think about it, back in the 70s and 80s, we paid more for the state paid more towards that. Two-thirds was the state and one-third family. Now it's, 50% to two-thirds are on the family. And again, that's just not sustainable for your average middle-class family.
Right.
So we need to start doing something. I agree.
You are also very passionate about mental health aides that so many students need in our schools, inside of those walls, as well as counselors. Tell us a little bit about your passion for that.
So I've heard from a lot of constituents, including some that are school counselors, and just the, I don't know if it's social media or what it is, but there's just more and more and more that these kids are facing, and they said mental health is just a huge issue. And so I have a bill to put a school counselor to help deal with just the day-to-day issues that kids have into every school. Iowa and Wisconsin already require counselors in every school. The national average is about 450 students per counselor. The Counselors Association said it should be closer to about 250, but the national average is 450. Minnesota's closer to 700, 750 students. I mean, you can, that's just not doable. And if you look at from the school safety issue with the shootings we've had, I mean, those teachers can help literally, maybe stop something before it happens. They can maybe help deal with the student in elementary school that might be having some issues so they don't have them later on. And it saves money in the long run, and it hopefully keeps that kid on path to graduate and just deal with just their day-to-day lives and helps. And so it's, again, something that I think all of us at the legislature are hearing, and we are all focused on mental health, and there's just different ways of doing it and different ways of what we could be looking at. And this is just one idea to help get that student ratio down.
Okay, tell us the process of how this bill can get done.
So I've introduced the bill. We have committee hearings going on, and so it may or may not get a hearing. I'm in the Senate. It's been introduced in the House, and then there's other bills out there too, and so they'll be getting hearings. And at some point around March 15th, middle of March, is our first deadline. And so the budget comes out, the governor's budget comes out February 20th, later this week, February 19th, and then we have a new budget forecast on the 28th, and that kind of tells us how much money we have to work with. And so that'll be key to how much goes to where. You look at just the K-12 funding, just to inflation alone is about $300 to $400 a biennium.
Mm.
We put about $12 to $15 million in for more counselors in the last few years, but it did a good job, and it helped some school districts, but it didn't fund everybody that needed and requested counseling. So a lot of this will depend on what the budget says. And then, you know, the work really gets started.
Will the budget that could possibly be passed, would it be enough to cover the children we needed to cover?
Let's hope so. I'm going to do my part to try to get it there.
Oh, goodness. If there was
people to call their legislators and let them know, you know, what are their values and what do they want to see their taxpayer money go to?
Wow. I wish people would say, you know, I've had many people say to me, in fact, I had a chance to speak to about 4,000 school board members in New York, and they were all elected. Mm-hmm. And I will never forget when I did my research and kind of went and talked to some of them, and one man didn't have any children. He said, why should my tax dollars pay for children I don't even have? You know, why should my tax dollars go to make sure that they have counselors, make sure that they have this? I shouldn't have to pay for that. What would you say to someone like that?
But it doesn't just benefit you. It benefits all of us because it benefits the economy when we have an educated workforce and we have people that are living up to their potential and living up to the American dream. This is kind of about our entire society. Those workers, those educated workers in Minnesota benefit you either through the taxes they're paying or if you end up in the hospital. They're the doctors and nurses and people that are working on you. They're the people that are, you know, fixing our roads. It is all of us together make this economy and the Minnesota lifestyle that we have. And we always get high rankings because we have such a great, you know, we've got parks and schools and theater that people want to and enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And that just adds to our economy. And so all of those educated workers add to our economy.
That's for sure. Okay, now we've approached this many times here in the great state of Minnesota. And so why do you think this is going to make it this time?
We have a new governor, we have a new House, and I think we have a legislator that is focused on how do we help these kids. We have the business community saying we have all these jobs that need to be filled. So hopefully it is just the perfect storm and we can move some of these bills forward.
Well, I so appreciate you coming on with us, Senator Carrie Dedzic. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
We want to let people know that right now on WCCO for tweets, you can join me at #StillTalking to talk about this bill that would make the first 2 years of college tuition free at Minnesota public colleges and universities. I want to know what you think. Should the state provide funding for students to attend college? Whether you have children or not, do you think that the state should provide funding for students to attend college and include the books in that as well? All you have to do is go to twitter.com/WCCO radio, and look up the tweets for, right now for Senator Carrie Dedzic joining me tonight, #StillTalking. And all you have to do is click on no, yes, or I'm for no interest loans. Ugh, loans. Our children are always in debt, Shaletta. You've got four little ones, honey. You just wait. And the debt is painful. It's really painful. It shouldn't be that they have to sell their kidneys just to pay for school. My son right now would love to go to law school or get an MBA. But at $250,000, he said, Mom, I'm not taking on another dime of debt. I've got enough. It's just too much. And we know that we can do this. When we can give gigantic tax cuts to the top percenters, why can't we invest in our children? They are our future. If you want to know how we're going to fix all of the pollution and make sure that our water is safe for us to drink and our grandchildren to drink, how about we do this? It's 2 years. We're not talking even about a four-year education. We're talking 2 years of free tuition, college tuition, 2 years at a Minnesota public college or university. We even talk about the University of Minnesota. How much would that help, particularly those in the middle class? So what do you think? Should the state provide funding for students to attend college as well as their books? We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Hey, want to let you know that it's Corey Heppala. Have you heard about his show? At 9:10 a.m. every day, Monday through Friday, Corey is live in Fort Myers for this coming Monday on tomorrow for Twin Spring Training. Now, he'll catch up with players and more as they hit camp for real. Now, does he start at 9? Yes. He starts at 9 a.m. and goes until 12 p.m. You don't want to miss Corey Heppala, our newest addition here at WCCO. The phone lines are open for you right now. You are welcome to give us a call on anything that we've talked about tonight. 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. We just finished with a conversation about whether we would, you would feel okay about this bill being authored by Senator Kerry Dziedzic of Minneapolis, a Democrat, that is really saying first 2 years of college tuition, fees, and textbooks at Minnesota public colleges and universities to be free, period. That's pretty easy to me, right? Where does the money come from? How do we do it? Well, we should do a whole lot more. Why can't we do that? Or do you want to talk about the documentaries that Daniel Bergen was in studio talking about? And remember, Jim Crow of the North is happening on February 25th for TPT, right? And so much more. We had a lot that we talked about tonight. Remember the conversation with Ember Reichert Young and Amy Koch? If you'd like to join this conversation, we have a few minutes to talk. Let's go over to Scott calling in from Oakdale. Hey, Scott.
Hi, how are you doing tonight?
I think I'm doing all right, Scott. How you think I'm doing?
You sound good.
What is your comment?
Well, I just absolutely, I think that that the state should provide funding for for our kids' tuition. I mean, I think it's academia. The cost per credit is just getting out of control, and I think there needs to be a major redistribution of government funds out there, not only for helping military families get out of debt for their service, and the homeless, and just people that have problems psychologically, and absolutely to help, especially to help launch and maintain, our a healthy economy. I mean, if kids are so broke when they get out of school, they can't get a home, they can't get a car, and I think the government absolutely needs to play a big part in helping jumpstart their education for a career.
Well, I appreciate you calling in, Scott. Thank you so much.
You bet.
And let's ask and see, what do you believe? Do you agree with Scott that, yeah, we should absolutely do this? 2 years of college. We are not talking about 4 years of college. And what happens if, let's say, your child goes into a two-year program at a Minnesota state school or a university, and after a year they think, oh, I'm not sure of this, if I'm cut out for this. Then what should happen? Well, we can work all of that information out. But the bottom line is that if they are offered 2 years free tuition at a state school or university, can you imagine a state college or university? Can you imagine what that could do to really get them towards their finishing their degree in 4 years? I have a niece right now that is not a resident in Virginia, and she's going to school in Virginia, and it is so expensive for her family. It's incredible. And we have in resident, right? when you are a resident of Minnesota, if you're at the University of Minnesota, we're talking what, 28,000? 28,000? Insane.
It's a ridiculous amount.
It is a ridiculous amount.
And
so if you'd like to call in,
you can't afford it when you're 19, 20 years old.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
If you'd like to call in at 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. And again, we can talk about any of the things that we've talked about since 7 o'clock. If you'd like to join us, maybe you have a question or maybe you want to weigh in on something that was said, you are welcome to do that at 651-989-9226. We have about 8 more minutes left and would love to have you join us. Let's go over to Todd calling in from Carver. How you doing, Todd?
How are you?
I'm doing well. What is your comment tonight?
Well, my comment is if we provide free college for 2 years, what is the incentive to the institutes of higher education to rein in the cost that is skyrocketing over the last 10 years? I mean, there's absolutely no incentive, in my opinion, because then they know that they're going to get no matter what. The government is going to take those first 2 years. They're going to pay for it. They've got no incentive. When they start pricing people out of getting an education, then they've got to figure out some way to make it available to students. Otherwise, they are going to be closed. They're not going to be able to stay open with no students. So by removing that, by saying, oh, the government will pay for that, then you've got no incentive and they've got all of the money. All they have to do is get people to sign up and they've got, you know, cash flow.
Well, that's a really good point, Todd, but I have to tell you, I am the girl who would love to see 4 years paid for. I'm not kidding you, because the more educated the better.
I don't disagree. Education is great. But what is the complaint right now is that it is so expensive and we're burdening our children beyond reason. Well, what is the incentive then to bring that cost under control?
If we
pay for four of it. I mean, that would make it twice as easy. And then it's just a cash machine at that point, because it doesn't matter what the cost of the education is. They could make it as high as they wanted because they know they've got the government feeding that.
I disagree with that. If it's a public university, we're not talking about the private ones, universities and colleges.
I'm talking about public as well. I guess I've asked the question a couple of times. What is the incentive then for the university? What does it cost for 4 years at the U of M?
And I appreciate that you are concerned about the cost and how it can get out of control. I do appreciate that. At the same time, what I am concentrating on is to make sure that our student body in the great state of Minnesota can actually get the education so that we can go forward, up and forward, and do better. I don't know what it means. If these people are going to take advantage of this blessing for our students and say, oh, now we can come back on those 2 years and charge them even more money. We can double it. I can't imagine our legislators wanting to do that, letting them do that, because so much of the money that these public institutions are getting is from the taxpayers. So we can stop all of that, Todd. We can stop.
If money is already coming from the taxpayer, then why does it cost so much for the student in loans to go there?
Oh, I agree. I absolutely agree, because it's not being appropriated correctly as far as I'm concerned. But you know what we should do, Todd? We should run for office.
Yeah.
Good
enough.
That
would be great, wouldn't it?
Thanks for calling.
You'll be my running
mate,
right?
Let's make it work.
I'll be yours. Okay.
All right, Todd. That is Todd from Carver. Thanks for calling in. I sure appreciate it. My goodness. We have definitely talked about a lot tonight. Some very impassioned conversations. And I have to tell you, there is a piece of me that needs this conversation with you. This is where I come to fill up again, you see. If I'm pouring out all week long and I'm reading and watching, I was reading the New Yorker magazine today. I was going to bring it in tonight because there was an article I really wanted to read to you, a short article that was so beautifully put and it made so much sense to me, right? So I find myself reading as much as I can, taking in as much from magazines and newspapers, even those perspectives that I don't agree with. But take it in, Gerald, and see what people are talking about. At the same time, I know that when I come here and I get behind this microphone, that the blessing is that I'm able to converse with you. I'm able to have those conversations. I'm able to sense that here you are listening and supporting me. That's the way I feel. So this is one of my feeling stations, and I do hope that you find one of your own. Because how do we pour ourselves out constantly and never fill up? This is something I talk about a lot. So yes, I have my family. Yes, I have my friends, but I also have you. So every time you pick up the phone and you call me, even though you don't agree with me, it is still a way for me to connect with you and Philip. So thank you for letting me do that tonight. I exhaled about an hour ago, and it felt great, because now I am so excited for the rest of the night. So you know what's coming up next, right? It's Center Stage, all things arts and entertainment. We just believe you ought to know about it, and there's a lot of great stuff happening. I'm so excited because Big Head Todd is going to be on with us tonight. It'll be by phone, but I cannot wait. My sister Javita has a gold album with them. Really excited about that. Also, we had a chance to talk about Potted Potter. Did you hear about that show? Yeah, well, you're going to hear it. It was previously recorded, so stay tuned. That's coming up next right here on WCCO.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.